Welcome to the Samuel Andreev Podcast. To support this podcast, please visit the donation page of Samuel's website or his Patreon page. There are links in the description. Samuel's Twitter is at Samuel Andreev.
Hello, podcast listeners. Today I am bringing you a new interview with Cheryl Duvall. Cheryl Duvall is a pianist working out of Toronto, Canada, and she's somebody who I've had the honor of working with already. But I wanted to draw your attention especially to a new CD that Cheryl put out late last year, early this year, called Harbor. Harbor is a CD of piano compositions by the West Coast Canadian composer Anna Hostman. I think this is a remarkable CD, and I really would encourage each and every one of you to listen to it. Either find it on Spotify or iTunes or Apple Music, or even better would be to purchase a physical copy of the CD, because this is a beautiful package. It's beautifully designed. It's one of the more sort of attractive CD designs that I've seen in a long time, especially in the realm of contemporary music. This is beautiful, incredibly engaging, hypnotic work. It's wonderful new music from the Canadian music scene, and I just think everybody should hear it. So this is our discussion. We talked about Cheryl's background as a musician. We talked about what sort of repertoire she gravitates towards, the fact that she enjoys playing very, very long, immersive pieces as well. So I hope you enjoy this discussion. If you want to know more about Cheryl and her work, or about Anna Hostman and her work, you can find some links in the description of the podcast. So, hi, Cheryl. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, despite everything. How about you?
Yeah, not bad. I wanted to ask, actually, how you're sort of coping in this strange situation, because musicians all over the world are describing their experiences in confinement and how that's affecting their practice. And I thought it'd be interesting to hear your perspective on that.
It's been actually kind of good for me in some ways. Like I had more time to practice my own pieces and my instruments, and with a lot of things being canceled, for instance, performances that I was practicing towards for specific programs, it kind of gave me an opportunity to go and revisit pieces that, or learn pieces that I've always wanted to learn that I just never had time to do. You know, when you're performing on a pretty regular basis and jumping from one project to another project, especially as a contemporary musician, I think, you know, it's very hard to practice something that you're not hired to do, or something that is not one of your immediate projects. So just joyful practice sometimes is kind of pushed to the side, or kind of projects that you've wanted to do for personal reasons. So I've actually kind of revisited a lot of things and worked on some non-contemporary music just to make sure that I still have that in me. And I did actually apply to some live stream performing opportunities, which I'll be doing later in the month of April. So I'll be actually performing a program of works that I commissioned that all happened to be about water, not connected, but through the different people that I've worked with, they wrote pieces inspired by water. So I've kind of combined them into a program, and I'll be performing it for the National Arts Center at the end of April. So that's kind of been another focus now, putting this new program together.
So you're super busy.
Yes. Teaching on Skype. My choir that I've accompanied for 13 years is now switched to Zoom rehearsals that are not really singing focused, but we're teaching parts to the choristers and also trying to keep community alive in the choir with, asking them questions, having themes each week. And I should mention that they are like 12 to 18 years old. So it's kind of focused into that age group as well, and leadership building activities and things like that. So yes, busy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been interesting observing the effects of all of this, because as I've said a few times before, in my case, it hasn't really changed all that much. The main difficulty is just that I have a 2-year-old daughter who's home all the time. So that makes it hard to work during the day, which means I've had to do most of my work late at night.
Okay, yes. And it must be also hard to have to stay inside so much with a young daughter and not, I guess maybe you can do walks outside, but not really playing or.
Yeah, you're pretty restricted in what you can do here. Yeah, I mean, it varies from one country to the next, but in France, we need a government form to go out of our house to do anything, basically, including buying groceries. Yeah. So, yeah, and we're allowed to go. If we want it, we can do some exercise sort of things, so just get out for some fresh air, but it has to be within a 1 kilometer radius of the house. And yeah, I mean, it's taken very seriously, and there's a police presence on the streets, and yeah, you can't mess around.
Yeah.
So
I kind of wish that's how it was here, because I mean, I've been the person responsible for getting groceries for my family as well. Right when this happened, I had come to help out because my dad had surgery. And so I came to help and do some cooking, and then all of a sudden everything was shut down. And with them being older, I'm the person that's going out, and I'm doing gloves and mask and trying to keep the grocery shopping to every 2 weeks. But not everybody is taking it as seriously here. And It's really discouraging when you're out at places like the grocery store and seeing someone just walk into your personal space. And I actually had someone look at me and say something like, I was wearing gloves and mask, and they said, it's the people that are wearing gloves that are spreading it around. And I just like was like, where do you find that in your intellect? Like, how do you put that all together?
That's crazy. That's absolutely crazy. Yeah, there's a lot of really backwards misinformation circulating around everywhere. It's really incredible.
Yeah. I really was stunned, and I also am finding like those trips out for these necessities that you have to do, like they are so exhausting, like in a way that I've never experienced them before. So like that grocery shop, it actually knocked me out for 24 hours, like energetically.
Oh, for sure. And it's sort of anxiety provoking too. I mean, in my neighborhood in Strasbourg, I go outside and everybody's wearing masks and gloves, and they sort of recoil if you get even slightly close, less than 6 meters towards them, and they sort of change, you know, to the other side of the sidewalk, which is a really strange experience from a social perspective. Yeah, so it's strange, and then you get into the grocery store and you're terrified to touch anything, and so it's challenging. You get home and yeah, you feel pretty exhausted. So yeah. But I mean, I've just been trying to stay home as much as I can and focus on projects, which it sounds like you're doing that as well.
Yes, yeah. And I think also like we've had to cancel, or I'm not going to use cancel, right? We've postponed a lot of our programming that we had planned. So it's a lot of meetings and other kinds of planning sessions on how we're going to be moving forward, and also looking further into the future and planning some bigger projects that actually need the time to develop. That everybody that was involved in the development of it was so busy that, you know, with a lot of things stripped down, we have the kind of time and space to really think about those other projects that did need a little bit more time to develop. So everything's shifted in terms of activity levels and planning on how to move forward with the plans that were already there and also future things that we were hoping to do.
Well, I mean, one interesting side effect of all of this has been that there's a lot of people online, and a lot of people engaging with things that they didn't really have the time to engage with before. And I wouldn't be surprised if people are just listening to far more recorded music, you know, because it's just, imagine you're living alone in a studio apartment in a big city somewhere, and you're just stuck at home for 2 months. It's like, you're going to turn to electronic media for sure. And even if you're not in that situation, I mean, it's something that really can be a lifeline, I think. I'd like to bring this around to a CD that you did, I guess it was late last year. When did Harbor come out?
It actually officially came out on the 11th of January of 2020, but I did record it last May 2019. We worked sort of like every few months to do the next steps. So we kind of sat on it for a couple of months and then did some editing in July, and then another kind of month and a half went by and then revisited the initial edits and just cleaned them up over October. And then the artwork was done October. Liner notes, all of those things kind of happened a bit towards October and November. So it was definitely a good stretch of time that we were working on details and fine-tuning things.
I think that attention to detail really shows in the final package. I mean, first of all, the audio sounds great. It's a beautifully recorded CD. I think one thing that is worth pointing out is that in an age where people are really accustomed to listening to things on Spotify and iTunes and so on, I think that it's really important to put out an attractive physical object to encourage people to interact with physical media. And that's really the case here. This CD has a beautiful design. It's got excellent liner notes by our mutual friend Nick Storing. And he's amazing, yeah. He wrote a great essay to accompany the release. And you can tell that a lot of thought was put into the design. It looks very good.
We worked with my very dear friend Kristen Messina to create the artwork for the album, and also photographer that I have worked with and I trust, Shane Gray. And it was kind of interesting. We called him at the very last minute, and it just so happened that he was free the next day. Uh-huh. I found out about a little bit of extra funding that I didn't anticipate getting. And that would have been the funding that I could have used to kind of take things to the next level, which was amazing. So I actually called him. Anna Hostman was in town, and I called him and asked him if he was free the next morning. And he had just arrived home from LA, and he set us up with a makeup and hair person, and we were there at 6 o'clock in the morning. And the next day, it was just kind of this really whirlwind opportunity to get pictures with Anna and I together, which I think was really useful. And he did such a great job. And then Kristen created the artwork around the photos. And it really came together in a way that I could have never dreamed without these people.
I think it's so important, and it's good that you had such a good team around you working on something like this. I think maybe one thing people don't necessarily realize is how much work it is to put out a CD and how many people are involved. I mean, it's a collaborative effort on many levels. But if you want to do something, you know, that you can really be proud of and that works, I think, on every level, then it's a lot of work. So maybe, can you just introduce the project? Because this is a CD that that I think everybody should hear. It's a beautiful recording. I was really taken with it, and I've listened to it a number of times now. This is you performing the piano music of the Canadian composer Anna Hostman. So can you tell us just a bit of a background about your collaboration with her and how this whole project came about?
Yeah, absolutely. I was introduced to Anna's music just by luck. Elena Waniak is the violinist and co-artistic director of Thin Edge New Music Collective, and so her and I are the co-founders, co-artistic directors. And in 2012, she was asked to perform with this group in Toronto called Latent. They were performing some pieces by Anna, so that's how Elena met Anna. And she said, oh, I think we should ask her to write a duo for violin and piano for an upcoming show. And kind of at the same time, Anna was preparing her doctoral recital for U of T, and she needed a pianist, and Elena was going to be playing the violin in this quintet with voice that she had written for the doctoral recital, and asked me if I would do it. So I was like, oh, yes, of course, I'll play. And that was the first time I played any of her music. And I just loved her harmony and approach to counterpoint rhythm. And I was just taken with her music. And then she wrote the duo, Lattice, for Elena and I. And she's since then, it's gone on to be revised and then performed by other people. And we've taken it on tour to Poland and other places. She then wrote another quartet for our group called Linen. And then we did this mutual project with another group in Canada, Ensemble Paramaribo, where we introduced each group to a composer that we worked with regularly. So we recommended Anna to their group, and then they had a piece written, and it was recorded on an album that we did collaboratively, and it just kind of grew from there, our collaboration. And I asked her to write me a solo in around 2014, I think, and I thought it was just going to be like a 10-15 minute piece. That's kind of what I was asking for. And then a few months later, she came to me and we had lunch, and she handed me Harbor, and she was like, it's a little bit longer than we thought. And yeah, it really was significantly longer. It was actually 28 minutes at the time. And it was revised a little bit after the premiere as well. But it took me quite a long time to learn that piece, just because the depth of the piece, it's just humongous and very complicated.
What is your process working on new pieces then? Because especially something like that, a really major new piece of considerable duration, like how do you do that? Like, do you try to get it perfect for the first performance, or do you sort of accept that it's going to be something that needs to mature over a long period of time? How does that work?
It took me 2 years to learn it because I tried to get it as perfect as I could for the first performance and feel ready. But I was also like not focusing on solo music as much. I was kind of balancing solo between a lot of other things that I was doing at the time with Edge, and also with some other projects that I was performing. So I really dug into the piece when I was doing a Banff residency 1 year in 2017. And then I was able to premiere it in November of 2017. So after the premiere, Anna and I I let it sit for a little bit, and I just realized after that I was like, I need to record this piece. And so I started to talk to her about this, and she had two other solos at the time, and she kind of suggested that I record one of them, and then she write a companion work to that piece. So the first piece that she had ever written for piano was Darkness Pines. And she was going to write a companion work to that, and I would record the three pieces as the recording. And so I was kind of working from that perspective for quite a while. And then when she gave me the piece that she had written, which was Adagio, I felt that knowing so much of her music and having played so much, I've just had so much familiarity with the music, I felt that I needed to kind of fill in a gap between what I knew of her music and what kind of was going to be presented on the album. So I said, oh, would you mind if I also recorded Allemande? And she was like, oh yeah, of course, of course. And then she wrote Late Winter kind of around that same time. And then I was like, well, it's a short piece. Why don't I just add that one too? So then it kind of turned into this complete recording thing. And then just out of the blue in early May 2019, she said, I wrote you another piece. It's a gift. And so Yellow Bird made it onto the album just in time.
So this is basically, this is her complete piano music, complete solo piano music?
Up until May 2019, yes. It was a decade of music for piano that she had written. And she has written some short pieces since then. And I've also just been given a grant to commission her to write me an hour-long piece for solo piano. So I'm really excited about that. That should be coming in 2021 or something, 2022.
Was the duration of that piece her idea or yours?
Mine. So I love playing long works.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, tell me about that. What is the attraction there? Because, I mean, the main composer that spontaneously comes to mind when you mention extremely long durations is Morton Feldman. Those pieces, I love them. I mean, I'm a huge Feldman fan. They certainly pose some very particular performance problems, especially the very, very long late works. Just purely practical considerations, you know?
Yeah. I've performed piano, violin, viola, cello by Feldman. And the experience of performing that piece was something that I just like, I've only done it once and I can't wait to do it again. Even though it is very challenging, I just felt so fulfilled doing it, going through the motions of performing that piece in a kind of a really strange way. So I've also performed other longer durational works that I just feel like the composers have this opportunity to really dig into form in a new way and tell a new story or tell a more in-depth kind of musical story. And the ability to explore musical ideas in a longer form is kind of something that's really compelling to all of us, I think, that have been involved in these longer works. And so I've performed that late work of Feldman, and actually I remember really clearly like how sore my back was after I was done that performance. Like I just had this, like, it just felt like so stiff in my upper back, and I was just like, oh, I wonder how people deal with those 4 hour or 6 hour long pieces. And I've listened to some of them it live. I listened to the string quartet live once, and I was really grateful that they kept a kind of open mind for us to be able to stand up and walk around quietly throughout the performance, just to be able to stretch our bodies. That's kind of one of those practical concerns.
But when you're playing a piece like that, the Feldman piece, or any sort of very long work, are you completely immersed in the experience when you're on stage, or do you find your thoughts wandering and you're thinking, okay, I'm really getting sore? I mean, how does it work for the performer?
It's like something that transcends time for me. I start and then it's like all of a sudden it's over, and I'm like, where did that hour go? We've had the same experience with this piece that we've performed a number of times by Maria de Alviar, which is 1 hour long. It's called Thinking for violin and piano, and it's really physical. It's a very physical piece. But we've performed it a handful of times, and every time we finish and it's like, what just happened? Like, we just were playing an instrument for this amount of time, this one piece. We haven't stopped, but it feels like it was a blink of an eye. And we've had people say the same thing about the listening experience. It's just like they thought the 75-minute piece was going to be so long, but all of a sudden it was over.
Yeah, that's one of the strange things about time in music, is it's not the same as clock time. It's you experience it very differently. I mean, I've noticed that also with very short works on the other end of that spectrum, right? So things like the Webern cello and piano pieces, which last maybe 2 or 3 minutes in performance, but you're not listening to it and thinking, oh, that was just 2 or 3 minutes. I mean, you experience something that's very different. So, yeah. Well, I think that also functions in a very interesting way in Anna's music, because the very long works on that CD have the interesting quality of, I don't know how to describe it exactly. Well, Nick does a good job of describing it actually in the liner notes, where they're not goal oriented. They're not sort of inclining towards some ultimate arrival point, Right. They're very exploratory. They take their time. You're not sure where they're going, but they take you on a very interesting journey. So how would you describe them, and what is it like performing them also in terms of just getting a handle on the form of a piece like that?
Well, I have a different experience performing each of them, of the longer works. For instance, with Harbor itself, I'm very in the moment with that piece. And even though I know the trajectory of the music, I find that since I know it so well, I feel that it's very sectional. So when I'm in this one section, it's like I'm trying my best to embody the sound qualities that I want to in that section. And then the next section kind of happens. We happen upon a new section, and I kind of live in that section until it's over. And then maybe that's kind of how it feels short to me, because I don't think about it. I kind of think about it as small sections that just kind of happen after one another. But with a piece like Allemande, which is this like long meandering melody that goes through, that kind of just snakes its way through this musical terrain, I guess you could call it, I feel more as if I'm a storyteller in that piece. Like, you know how a person that actually embodies the role of a storyteller, and they are unfolding this tale for an audience that they know the ending of, but no one else knows it. So right. I kind mm-hmm. of feel like there's something about the performance of that piece where I feel as if I'm unfolding something for other people. And I also know that the ending of that piece is kind of like, it has those beautiful, like luscious chords at the end that are kind of, they're a little bit there earlier on, but to me, like, that's the point of the piece, almost, like the getting to those, that ending part, and then the opening theme comes back, and yeah, there's sort of this beautiful moment when all of this melody just kind of becomes harmony.
It's a gorgeous piece.
Yeah, so I that's kind of how I approach that. But I think that I just, with when performing, I think that I'm just so concentrated on what I'm doing, and I'm so concentrated on creating the tone that I want, and the phrasing, and just like showing the music as beautifully as I can, or embodying the sound that it needs as much as possible, that the time just kind of flies by, and it's not really something that I can that I experience as a long period of time, and I don't feel my body as much. And then afterwards, it's like, oh, that was 45 uh-huh. minutes. Oh, okay, that was 20 minutes. That was 25 minutes.
Well, there's definitely something transcendental about this music. And I think that's one of the qualities that that I found very attractive about it. And the other thing that I think I'd like to mention about it also is there's a clarity of touch to the performance, which is very intriguing. And I think this really comes through very, very well in the recording, particularly. It's very transparent. You can hear every note. You can hear every attack. It's not overly analytical, but it's very clear and transparent, like looking through a stream. How did you approach the pieces in terms of just pianistically, in terms of your relationship to the instrument in things like this? Because as you mentioned a while ago, there's counterpoint, there's melody, there's rhythm in these pieces, and those are sort of traditional categories that you would associate more with earlier keyboard music, as opposed to a lot of what gets written by composers, you know, working with piano these days. Some of the textures in these pieces, I mean, the first one is called Allemande, which refers to old Baroque dances and dance suites and things like that. And it's an almost Bachian kind of texture a lot of the time.
Especially at the end when we get those dotted rhythms that kind of like keep repeating over and over again. I love that part. Mm-hmm. I actually do really... sometimes when I'm thinking about the kind of clarity that I'm looking for, I think about what it takes to play the music of Schubert, uh-huh. if that makes any sense. And just that clarity. And also, he's a little more romantic than Mozart. So you have that, you need that crystalline kind of touch, that beautiful singing tone, but also beautiful phrasing. but they can be a bit more expansive and like have a bit more momentum up and down to the peaks and to the resolutions than kind of some earlier music. But also rhythmically, I have kind of two approaches to how I look at it, and it's really dependent on what's happening. But in some pieces, I try to make it seem like it's swimming around the beat, but mm-hmm. it's very, very rhythmic, and the rhythms are actually quite challenging. So many cross rhythms and like shifting meters and things. So I'm trying to make it sound the opposite of rhythmic, so almost like floating. Whereas other times I try to make it have more of a Baroque kind of rhythmic quality.
Yeah, I think that comes across very well. And the other thing actually is, it's clear that you're paying a great deal of attention to the voicing of chords, because there are some very complex chords in these pieces. And I mean, I have a kind of an analytical mindset. I can't help it. It's just how I am and how I listen to things. But listening to these chords, they're really surprising. They're very hard to describe. They have a quality that they sound related to the harmonic series, in the sense that she's clearly paying attention to resonance and acoustics and the way the notes blend together in a totally acoustic way. But at the same time, they're not functional chords. They're not chords that you can really classify very easily. And they have a very interesting balance, I think, between dissonant intervals and consonant, almost diatonic intervals in them. And you're just always sort of on this edge between something there's a certain tension in the harmony, but at the same time, as you said, it has a kind of floating quality.
Yeah. Sometimes when I think about her more chordal parts, I think about a kaleidoscope, you know, like when you turn it, it just kind of just changes a little bit. And so these chords kind of have that quality to me in a way, maybe more in an abstract way, I guess. But I did spend a lot of time trying to find really good balance for her chords, and especially in Darkness Pines, like, I mean, the whole piece is chords, and it's very easy to let that become very heavy. But I did a lot of experimenting with voicing and, you know, seeing which notes I thought made the most expressive approach to the chord. Sometimes I would try to bring out the middle, sometimes out the top, sometimes the lower, or balancing from the bass to the upper voices. I mean, I did try to shift it, and it was just a completely personal aesthetic choice in a lot of cases, though I did talk to Anna quite a lot about it too. So we did discuss, like, where is the voicing in this part? Like, what are you looking for in these sections? Or yeah, there was a lot of discussion that did happen. And, you know, she's living in Victoria now, so it was a bit harder to kind of collaborate closely on things. But when I was struggling, I would record something for her and I would send it to her and ask her. So there was definitely collaboration in that regard to kind of coming up with the final product of the recording.
In order to help keep this podcast going, I've decided to accept some highly select sponsors that I think could really make your life better. On this episode, I'd like to welcome my new sponsor, Encoda. That's N-K-O-D-A. If I had to sum up Encoda in a few words, it's basically the Spotify of sheet music. It's available on all major platforms, including iOS, Android, Mac, and Windows. If you've ever wanted to look at a score for study purposes or just check out some potential repertoire without wanting to pay full price, Encoda is your solution. They have an extensive library of tens of thousands of scores from all periods, all styles, and many different publishers. You can view high-resolution scores and parts. The app is easy to navigate and is a pleasure to use. Download it from your app store or start a free trial and see for yourself. And if you like it, it's available on a subscription basis. That's nkoda.com. There is a huge range in terms of contemporary composers between people who approach rehearsals or you know, working with performers in an almost improvisatory way where they're not exactly sure what they want and they're sort of trying out different things. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you have people who are completely maniacal about controlling every single detail. I wonder where she might fit on that spectrum.
I think there's not a lot of control, and there's a bit of improvisation, but she's also very specific about certain things while being open-minded about other things. Like, we had a couple of options for Alamond, like a couple of spots. It's actually mostly one take, which was kind of incredible because I had never performed that piece, but with a few inserts. And when it came down to choosing which takes I would insert, it was very much a discussion. It wasn't like her choosing it. It was kind of like, well, you know, I really kind of like the jumbliness of this one and how it's a bit more bumbling than, you know, this really smooth take of it. And so we sometimes would opt together for, and she definitely deferred a number of times to like how I felt about choosing certain takes. Though when we were working towards performances, she's definitely very specific about things like pedaling. And we found a number of other things, other kind of phrasing things together through like experimentation or just sitting together and me playing for her and just, you know, her giving me a suggestion of like, oh, can you maybe like diminuendo through this little gesture rather than crescendo, or just things like that would happen. So there was that level of improvisation. Definitely very specific about pedaling, and then also kind of very open to my interpretations as well.
One other thing I wanted to ask you about the CD, it seems like it's gotten a lot of attention so far, and you've got some very prominent supporters, people like Alex Ross, who have been listening to the CD and enjoying it and blogging about it. And I've seen a number of reviews of it so far, and it seems like people are really getting into it, which is a great thing, and I hope that continues a lot. So this podcast has a very scattered listenership around the world, and I just wonder if you can situate her music within the Canadian musical landscape a little bit, if that makes any sense as a question, because when you're obviously working in that world, you know sort of what the context is, but for people outside of it, they might not know, is this a composer working within a musical language that might be a representative aesthetic within Canadian music? Or like, how would you place her with regards to composers of her generation, let's say, working in Canada?
Well, I feel like she fits into this kind of compositional, I don't want to call it a compositional school, because that seems a little bit kind of in a box, but composers like Martin Arnold, Linda Catlin Smith, Cassandra Miller, I feel like she's in the world of that kind of aesthetic. The label Another Timbre in England seems to have focused a lot on this style of compositional aesthetic, and I feel like she would fit into that kind of compositional landscape.
This is very meticulously written instrumental music that uses very traditional categories such as counterpoint and harmony and rhythm, but in a very new and fresh way. And that's something that I hope we continue to see more and more of, because there are a lot of mannerisms in the avant-garde that become sort of a new form of academicism, actually. And what I hear in this music is something very personal and very fresh and quite vital. It's really nice that it gets such a beautiful presentation on this CD. And yeah, I also know the label you mentioned that's releasing CDs of Linda Catlin Smith and others. And she's been actually getting a fair bit of international attention recently. She had a major performance at the BBC Proms this past fall. And I've seen her CDs in shops in London, and that's great to see as well.
Yeah, it's very exciting. So, yeah, she was actually my composition professor when I was in my undergrad.
Oh, I didn't know you studied composition.
I just did 1 year of composition. I did a theory degree, so we had to take a composition class, and she was the professor, and I wrote some pieces, and she was very encouraging. But I was very focused on performance, and I thought, you know, I don't have time to be great at composition and also work towards being a better performer. So I kind of let that drop and let the people that are really great composers like yourselves and others do the composing.
Have you noticed a difference in reception with this music between audiences in Canada and when you play them abroad?
Of Linda's pieces and Anna's pieces?
Yeah.
It's interesting, actually.
Because you did a tour in Germany not long ago.
I performed Darkness Pines on that tour.
Yeah.
And the audiences loved it. I actually had people coming up to me afterwards and asking me for the score. And even though it's not the aesthetic that we worked with some German composers for that tour, because we were collaborating with an accordionist, Olivia Steimel from Germany. Mm-hmm. And while we were working, the aesthetic of the pieces that we got from the German composers was much more into like the complexity and other kinds of things like that. Whereas Darkness Pines is quite, we talked earlier about like floating chords and mm-hmm. things like that, much more slow and intimate and introverted in a way. But it was really well received. Yeah, I was pleasantly very happy, and I don't want to say surprised, but I guess you never know how things are going to be received when you go abroad. And also when we toured in Japan, Elena and I performed with their Shadows Long by Linda Catlin Smith, and that was also a very, very well received piece. Though I do believe that Linda's music is becoming a bit more popular over in Japan, so people want to hear more of it. And in fact, I've been asked that if we go back, that I'll do a performance of Ballade, which I've performed before, which is another long piece by Linda with a cellist from Japan. So I know that there's more interest kind of popping up for music of this style, I guess you could call it, in other countries.
There's definitely, an attitude, I would say, that is markedly different. It's much more spacious, contemplative, inward, as you said. It sort of it has an introverted quality to it. And without being goal-oriented, I think that's one aspect of it that really is key. I mean, you used the term meandering. And the fact that it's finding such a significant international audience, I think, is also very revealing. I mean, there may be a real hunger for work of this kind. And it's a far cry from the sort of stereotype a lot of people have of new music as being something off-putting and difficult and, you know, hard to listen to and so on.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you.
Yeah. So tell us about Thin Edge and your involvement with that. So this is a new music collective started in Toronto, I guess, about 7 or 8 years ago?
9 years.
9 years ago.
9 years ago, yeah. Thin Edge is, we're just a flexible ensemble here in Toronto. We have been working very hard to, work with emerging artists, emerging composers, finding more balance in programming, and championing works of the 20th and 21st century. But yeah, we do a lot of commissioning, and we've been working a lot more interdisciplinary over the past few years. This past summer, we did more kind of like this interesting theatrical mix of contemporary music with theater. We worked with a theater artist to create a work, as well as performing Peter Hatch's piece of, he calls it musical theater, but in a different kind of context. All the musicians had to do kind of different movements, some speaking and things like that. And we also did a video game piece in that by Remy Hsu, who kind of created this interactive video game contemporary music work, which was very interesting. We kind of try to do a lot of different sorts of programming, from traditional chamber music concerts to more adventurous interdisciplinary works like the theatrical one I just said, or we've worked with contemporary circus artists, and we've created art installations with people, and worked with media arts, spoken word poet. So yeah, we try to kind of incorporate different kinds of contemporary art into contemporary music as well, but we're on hold at the moment because of COVID-19. Right. We had to postpone our annual premieres concert, which is we had commissioned four new works, and we were going to be workshopping with really emerging composers. So kind of giving them an opportunity to work with a professional ensemble for a week to develop the works. And then we were going to be recording all of their works and performing so that they could have some really valuable collateral for, you know, going forward with their careers. So that's on pause until hopefully we have it kind of tentatively planned for August. So hopefully if things turn around, we'll be able to do something then. And we just found out we had to postpone our June concert as well, which was going to be actually a world premiere of a new 40-minute long piece by Linda Catlin Smith for piano quartet, Well, we'll still be performing it. It just will be pushed until maybe the fall or whenever we're allowed to perform again and meet in groups of more than 5 people.
Right.
Or outside of our family unit, I guess, is where we're at right now.
Because there's a concern this could go on into June.
Yeah, well, in Toronto, they've canceled all of the major events until the end of June. And also there's, I'm not sure if it's a total law or not, but talk of like no meetings of people greater than 5 people or not being able to kind of socialize or be with people outside of your immediate family unit for the time being, except when you're doing groceries, I guess.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, it makes it complicated to keep an ensemble going.
Yeah.
During like that.
We're on pause for the moment, but we do have our parts and we're all practicing and getting our parts prepared for when we are hopefully able to get back together. And like I said, we did reschedule the workshop for the composers. So hopefully that'll happen late August. And then, yeah, we're moving into thinking about what we're going to do for our 10-year anniversary next year, which will probably be a lot of the programming that we had planned for this year. And hopefully recording the new work by Linda alongside some of her other unrecorded works.
How do you see the evolution of the new music scene in Toronto generally, let's say over the past couple of decades? Well, this is a question I'm interested in personally because I was vaguely involved with it when I was quite young, and then I left for France, and I've been living here for 17 years now. So I interact with the Toronto scene intermittently. And whenever I go back, I get the sense that it's constantly changing and evolving in interesting ways. And it seems to me, and I don't know if this is an illusion, but it seems like it's significantly opened up compared to what I remember from the early 2000s.
I think that it's also due to, you know, like we've had more younger ensembles kind of pop up that are exploring different aesthetics. There was definitely like kind of, for a long time, from what I understand anyways, no really new groups with energy kind of coming together to perform new music in the early 2000s or ones that decided to stick around, like maybe like concerts here, concerts there. But there was kind of a number of groups that were just there for 30, 40 years at that point in time that had been doing great work over the course of their lifetime of the organization. But I think, yeah, when we started up about 9 years ago, there hadn't been anything come along for quite a while. And that's the understanding that I had, was that the contemporary music scene was really kind of happy to have this kind of influx of younger energy, I guess. I don't want to say that in a bad way, but like we were new and we just had completely different ideas and we weren't really influenced by any of the other groups that had been around for a long time. And then after that, there's been a number of other groups that have come along, and everybody kind of has their own personality or their own kind of things that they want to explore. And I find with Thin Edge, we've kind of also, maybe because we're more easily connected with the internet and can find music more easily, we've been able to explore like a lot of different aesthetics and also connect with composers from Montreal, from Vancouver, that I think were more traditionally like kind of stuck in their cities. So I think just the access that we have and people posting their music more for people to find, and, you know, also going to festivals, meeting new people, networking, it's just allowed a lot of new ideas to come into the scene. U of T has a really big composition department now. York as well, very different aesthetics at both places. And I think also there's been some like turnaround with some artistic direction in the city too, and just some new ideas coming in.
No, it's super exciting, and I've really observed that. I've been fortunate to be doing more and more projects in and around Toronto over the past few years, so that's been really nice. So, and I've noticed also the tremendous diversity in the audiences, particularly. It didn't used to be that way. Around the time I left, I mean, you recognized the same people at all the concerts. But to be fair, that's the case in a lot of places. It's the case here too. And it's certainly the case at festivals. There's a kind of a core audience, I guess you could say, that is very loyal. But it seems like the events that I've been able to take part in more recently, you see a huge mix of people. it's really diverse, and that's been really nice to see.
Yeah, it's kind of exciting. I remember this kind of interesting shift from my own personal experience of having kind of like this audience of friends and family that sort of started out, and then we would have this audience that stuck with us for many years, and then all of a sudden we started having audience of like more people that we didn't recognize than that we did, and that was kind of like a really interesting turning point. And also seeing new faces at every single show that we produce, and just more people engaging with, I think, the contemporary music medium and seeking out these kind of new listening and adventurous listening experiences. I think it's really awesome.
So how important has electronic media and social media been, do you think, in developing that?
Huge. I think it's really important for us. We are sharing things on social media more than buying ads in print. Mm-hmm. So having a great look for your poster, or sharing great recordings, information about the composer's little videos, making of videos, or little interview videos with composers or musicians that are involved, I think really go a long way. And getting people interested, just kind of getting to know who the person is a little bit more. And you can do that so much more on social media than you can on just a poster or in a small like listing, or even in just buying an ad space in a newspaper or a magazine. So there's some more emotional connection, I think, through social media, in a way.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's really good to see. I mean, on that note, how can people find out more about you and your work, and especially this beautiful CD?
I have a website, CherylDuval.com. Thin Edge also has a website, ThinEdgeNewMusicCollective.com. And Harbor is, you can find a link to that on my website. It's also available on Bandcamp and Apple Music, Spotify, yep. All the places that you can stream or purchase music, whatever you choose to do. And also Redshift Records, which is the recording label that released Harbor. You can find a lot of great recordings alongside just, you know, like amazing, amazing works and recordings on that label. And yeah, I have a Facebook page, Cheryl Duval Pianist, if you like to see more social media.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Well, we'll put all of those in the description of the episode as well. So thanks for taking the time to talk.
Well, thank you for asking me. This is amazing. I really, really, truly appreciate it. And it's been great to chat. And I hope to see you in Toronto once this is all said and done. Ooh.